ladies and gentlemen.
British Columbia.
You're listening to Pacific Town Sound Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm James.
And I'm Travis.
And welcome to Pacific Sound Radio, your go-to source for everything happening in the Vancouver music scene. Thank you to everyone who made it out to the first installment of the Snug Concert Series. Emma Citrine was fantastic, and we can't wait to see where this new venture takes us. For those who missed the show, you can check out footage on our YouTube channel at Pacific Sound Media. For this week's Pacific Sound Profile, we'll be joined by producer and audio engineer Cody Taylor of Fiend Recordings. And for this week's featured guest, we have the tremendous pleasure to be joined by Haley Blaze. Haley Blaze is a rising indie folk pop singer-songwriter whose latest EP, Let Yourself Go, is one of our favorite local releases of 2018. For listeners in the city, Haley Blaze is also performing this week's edition of the Snug Concert Series right after this broadcast. Swing on by the Persephone Snug Tasting Room, located conveniently, right next to the Save on Meats restaurant, to catch Haley up close and personal. Trust me, you don't want to miss this one. We have a packed show lined up for you folks, but first on to the weekly roundup. What's in the news, Travis?
All right, well, first off, congratulations to the two BC finalists for the fourth annual Alan Slate Juno Masterclass. IMUR and the Catherines are two of the 10 artists across Canada hoping to earn a spot. If you're unfamiliar with the Juno Masterclass, it's an artist development program that is tailored to the individual band or artist. Huge opportunity, and we hope BC gets some strong representation this year.
And IMUR and the Catherines, are they're the two BC-based ones?
Yeah, they're the two out of the 10, and there's three spots.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully either of them can
hopefully
can make
both.
It into the... Yeah, that'd be great. IMUR especially, because they're fantastic. Mm-hmm. We featured music on their program before, and I think they got a new EP coming out soon, so...
Yeah, should be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to go see a show, it's nice to be able to go see a show. In a survey of British Columbians, 97% of people want ticket scalping bots banned. It's troubling that 3% of people are robots.
Very troubling. Mm-hmm. There needs to be some sort of initiative, some sort of test maybe. I'm trying to think. The VoIP-Conf test?
Maybe if you can identify stop signs.
I mean, job creation.
In a picture.
You could, you know, start having a Blade Runner division for law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyhow.
83% of people support putting a limit on the price of ticket resales. And then 51% of people support prosecuting the people or businesses responsible for scalping.
I remember one of the more egregious examples of that is that there was scalping for the final Tragically Hip tour, which was a little gross. That was like, come on, guys.
Yeah, people got pretty upset about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know there's been some bigger bands to mixed success have had anti-scalping measures put in. I remember when Led Zeppelin did that one-off reunion show back in 2007.
Yeah.
Like 11 years ago. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
They had it where pretty much you could only pick up tickets if you had, like, ID attached to your credit card, and you had to be the one who used the credit card and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last time U2 came here, they had some anti-scalping measures put in, but it unfortunately resulted in a slowdown, massive slowdown the day of the show for people who were trying to get into the venue.
And then there's always like verified pre-sales and stuff like that too that help.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to register in advance to get a code to be able to.
There's things that can be done.
But that's a lot of work for the fan.
Yeah, but at the same time, if it's set up in a way that, like, it's not something that a bot can bypass, then I think that's worthwhile.
Yeah, for sure. And our deepest condolences to the friends and family of Ken Pickering, who passed away August 10th. Ken was a co-founder of the Vancouver Jazz Festival and made countless contributions to both the Vancouver music scene and its musicians. Sad news.
Sad news. He'll definitely be missed. He's made a tremendous impact on the city and the music community here. So, good thoughts and prayers and all that to the Pickering family.
And all that jazz.
I'm not sure if that was exactly appropriate, but anyhow.
Yeah, but it's time for the concert listings.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right after our shirt at... Ugh. Right shirt? After our shirt.
Because you're wearing a shirt.
I am.
I'm wearing a shirt, too.
Yeah. It's not a topless show this week.
It has been that hot.
Mm-hmm. Right after our show tonight, be sure to be at the Persephone Snug to catch Haley Blaze. And after that, you can catch last week's guest, Patrick Spencer, and Rumor Mail at the Belmont Bar for Locals Lounge.
It's going to be a very busy night.
Mm-hmm. And then all the way down on Thursday.
There's nothing going on Monday through Wednesday?
Nothing I caught.
Okay.
Nothing that got passed along to me through the grapevines.
No, I just, I always wonder if we missed something, but.
Oh, we always miss something. But Thursday, you can catch Mank and Joshua Job at the Roxy. And then you can also head to the railway to see Blackwood Kings, Big Evil, Redren, and Johnny Wrath.
Big Evil are awesome. Played a show with those guys. They are weird in a good way.
They had the saxophones?
Yes.
Yes, I remember them.
They're an instrumental avant-garde jazz band. That might be a really hard sell for some listeners, but they're really cool. I like them.
Yeah.
Let's see. And then on Friday, August 24th, Strange Breed is throwing a show to celebrate the band's first anniversary with guests Wrong, Glass Apes, and Damn It Samantha.
Mm-hmm. Ponytails are having a single release show at the Box Cabaret with guests Booty EP and Babe Corner.
On Saturday, August 25th, you can catch Young Blood perform their new EP, Fantasy Love, at Blue Light Sessions at Blue Light Studios.
Mm-hmm. And then the 2018 BC Wildfire Benefit Concert is at the Rickshaw. Catch Cobra Ramone, Counterpoint, The Get Mines, and The Carbons. Proceeds go to the Canadian Red Cross for Wildfire release last year. They raised $1,500, so definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, it's a shame that I mean, wildfires happen every year, but it's a shame that these are becoming a really necessary event to help mm-hmm. out those in areas like Prince George. But yeah, definitely go out and show your support, or at the very least, donate to whatever local charity you feel can help best mm-hmm. help those people in those areas.
Mm, definitely. You can also see the Oakstones and the Flu at the Roxy.
Nicole Audrey is having an EP release show at the Railway with guests Kelly and Gibson, High Stakes, and Focus Your Audio.
The Dead Zones are at SBC Restaurant with Motorama, Maddie R. and the Scars, and Monsoon Moon.
You can catch Uncle Sid and the Redwoods at the Red Room.
Mm-hmm. Love the Redwoods. Really nice guys.
Yeah, nice guys. We had them on the show.
Mm-hmm. And then Park Sound Studio Presents is also taking place on Saturday. Catch Harlequin Gold, Matt in Georgia, and Max Kaszewski at Park Sound Studio.
All the way out in North Van. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not that far. You can bust there. And then this show is in a few weeks, but we're going to pump it because it's a pretty big local show.
Mm-hmm.
Small Town Artillery is having an album release show at the Imperial for their new record, Don't Talk Away the Magic. And they're joined by The Long War and Year of the Wolf. It's going to be a great show. That's an awesome lineup.
Mm-hmm. We've talked to all those bands. They're all really great people and one amazingly undying bassist.
Yeah, and all three bands
going on a little
working
bit of
overtime.
A tour.
Yeah.
So three shows a night for a little while. That's a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the concert listings and the news for this week. And time for our first headliner single, which comes from the daring and dynamic hip-hop duo So Loki. Featuring a thunderous beat and cryptic lyrics, this experimental rap crew proves on this track yet again that they are one of the most exciting acts in Vancouver. This is Elephant Man.
This is Elephant Man.
Elephant man, look at me lift. I got a bag, dash it with free, fill it with piff. Straight so bad, I call the cops, I watch them pull up. Lock away, man, she a babe, cough up, lock away. Hey, I wanna house in the bay, hey, get my little brother a skate. Swag on him every day, play, press to a hit or replay. Yeah, hey, yo, have to hit that replay. Yeah.
my soul. I got a plan, it's part of my lift. I am the man, I am the man, I am a gift. I need a driver, I need an Uber, I need a lift. I used to walk. I got a bag, that shit was free, fill it with piff. Shit's so bad, I call the cops, I don't shoot, pull up. Knock away, mess your babe, come for it, knock away.
Oh, sure. And we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was the latest single from Soloki titled Elephant Man. Their latest EP, Planet Bando, is available now on Spotify, Apple Music, and probably Bandcamp, but at least on Spotify and Apple Music. On this week's Pacific Sound Profile, we're joined by Cody Taylor. Cody is a veteran music engineer and is a member of Fiend Recordings. He has worked with other notable industry figures, including Kevin Doyle, Garth Richardson, Warren Livesley, and Sean Cole, and also works as an instructor at the Nimbus School of Recording. This man has more qualifications than I can even list, and we are very pleased to have him on the show. Please welcome Cody Taylor.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. So when did you decide that you wanted to pursue a career in music?
Ooh, that's not a tough question, but it's a long answer, I think. You know, just being obsessed with listening to music and really, there we go, nice and close with you. Just from a young age, I was just always obsessed with, well, especially recorded music, live music, anything music. I just lived it. And I really just wanted to learn what being a music producer meant. And it took me a couple years to be able to figure that out, and I still don't know. You know, there's so many different versions of that definition, right? What is a music producer? What makes a music producer? But that was kind of the goal, was how do I find people who can make me sound good and record me? But then that turned into how can I do that for myself, I guess, right? So that's kind of what it stemmed from.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about your time at the University of Western Ontario. I understand you specialized in a number of different fields.
Yeah, Western was a good intro into, you know, it was post-secondary education, obviously, and I took classes in business, took classes in, you know, a lot of music courses, composition, music theory, and I definitely gravitated more towards the music side of things. The business stuff is very interesting. Not a big fan of, you know, economics or statistics or that kind of stuff. So the number side of it and the marketing side of it was definitely maybe not as interesting to me, but definitely the music is what I gravitated to, and that's what brought me into wanting to become or be a part of a studio and work within that, you know, those types of spaces, I guess, right?
Yeah, and you also studied at Fanshawe College, where you completed the Music Industry Arts Program. What were some of the topics that you studied there?
So Fanshawe was a little bit more specialized in that it was just audio engineering, music production. There are other courses like, you know, how to give a good speech, how to be, you know, some music history stuff as well, and music theory. But it was a lot more specialized in that they sort of taught you how to work in a studio. They taught you what it meant to be like kind of a good hang, right? And a lot of that is just kind of, you know, just being, having good vibes, you know, not like holding up the session and kind of removing the ego from being in the studio, right? Because you have a lot of people working together. You don't want all these heads to butt together and become challenging, you know? So the easiest you can make it for an artist to sort of express themselves and get across what they're trying to say and what they're trying to play on a microphone, that's what you need to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what, you know, that's what started out. That's where I finally learned how and what a music producer did, right?
Yeah, and kind of speaking to the other side of the coin there, while you were in school, attending post-secondary, you played in a couple of bands. Can you talk about the bands you were in?
Yeah, well, a couple of them. I actually lived with the main band that I played in while I was in university. We were called Crash Kingdom, and that was the name of our house, actually, when we moved all in together. And so I lucked out when I went to university. My year was what was called a double cohort, so it was, you know, two different grades from Ontario, a grade 12 and a grade 13, all graduating at the same time. So when we all decided, or we all were going to university, there was a huge influx of people, obviously. So I got roomed with not one, but two people in what used to be a two-room dorm room, right? So there was a drummer. He was studying percussion, Roger, and there was a pianist, Mike. And we all wrote music, and we were all, you know, very passionate about what we were doing. And I sort of specialized with guitar and singing. So the three of us made a band together. We then, after our first year, moved into a house together, and we just wrote and played and sort of, you know, some of my first recordings with those guys were a single microphone, an SM57 with an 8-track digital recorder, like a little Roland unit, and we recorded a whole record with a single mic and, you know, drums, vocals, everything was that single microphone, right? So that was definitely a process.
Yeah, and then you had a second band, I think, when you were at Fanshawe, right?
Yeah, right. And then, you know what? The name's kind of escaping me right now, to tell you the truth.
Okay, I saw it on your LinkedIn of all places, probably. But it's also, I should have included that in my notes.
No, you know what? What it turned into
black
was...
Black something? Was it black something? No? Okay, I'm guessing.
We turned
I'm
into Four Pistols, actually, right?
Oh, okay, there we go.
That's
sounds,
the name.
That sounds right.
And so I played rhythm guitar in that band. And so the main artist and the core writer of that group was Steve. He goes by Steve Rivers now, and he lives in Nashville on and off. Comes back to Ontario every once in a while for sure because his family's there. But he, you know, is still a very prosperous country artist. And that was sort of more of a country rock thing. I definitely brought more of the rock vibe because I was like, you know, the rhythm player of that band. But we all went to school at Fanshawe together, and we were lucky enough to kind of, you know, obviously have some time to jam out and stuff like that. We also had studio time. So we had the ability to kind of go into the school and, you know, record whenever we could when we didn't have to do assignments and stuff like that. So that was just sort of like cutting our teeth as far as like, how do you write music together? Rehearse it together, go into the studio and make it as good as you can, right?
And I imagine with both bands, just having the advantage of being able to access a studio very freely, probably without having to pay much, if at all,
yeah,
or to use the space and record some demos and stuff like that, must have been handy.
Yeah, definitely. You know, some of that stuff was definitely not usable, right? Or some of that stuff was definitely, you know, like you're learning things.
You want to delete it permanently.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely something to be said about, you know, producing or engineering your own music. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why most of those things are given to separate people as much as they can be. Sometimes the budget is, you know, you have one or two people and they're doing the whole thing from, you know, the production, engineering, all the way to the mixing and the mastering, right? So, that just is a learning experience, right? It's something that you get better at. But if you're doing it for yourself, it is even more difficult because you have to worry about all those other elements on top of, am I playing the right chord in this section? Am I, you know, saying the right words in this part, right? So it's kind of nice to give those jobs to other people if you can have the ability to.
Did you ever find when you were recording yourself or recording a musical project that you were working as a part of the process would become a little bit more arduous because you tend to overthink what you were working on? Is that something that came about?
When you're recording like your own material?
Your own material,
kind of
yeah.
Definitely. I mean, there's definitely things you can overlook and there's things you can kind of dwell on too much, right? So you're so far into a song. And I think it definitely depends on your personality and kind of your mindset when you're in the studio. But, you know, if you're more the technical type, more the engineering side of things, and you're dwelling on your snare sound for, you know, hours upon hours upon hours, you might miss out on some of the things that you could have added or subtracted or, you know, any of those things that could make your song better. You're just worried about that one small element that probably at the end of the day, the listener isn't going to be like, I hate this song because the snare is really bad, right? There's a handful of those songs, maybe, but for the most part, you know, it's kind of about the big picture. It's hard to keep that big picture in mind when you're so far into it, right? You can't really get an outside view of it because you're already so invested in that thing. So,
yeah, especially like, you know, if you are so familiar with your material, especially playing it live, you're like, oh, you know, we play this song and we like it because, you know, we like it, but we don't even know externally if it's good or not.
Yeah.
That kind of phenomenon.
That goes to show, really, I mean, there's a lot to be said about playing a song, engaging a reaction from a crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's really nothing that tops that, especially if it's like a legitimate fan audience and you can go out there and play them a new song and see what the reaction is. And it's definitely going to change, you know, depending on your performance, depending on you know, the night, the venue, the mm-hmm. audience, obviously. But if a whole crowd is really stoked on a brand new track, like, you should go out and record that thing, right? Get it out there, because there's definitely that's the test group right there.
Absolutely. I think I play in a band, and we dropped a song from our set list because our vocalist was noticing that that one specific song was the song that people would go to the bar during.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Oh, it's the time for another beer song. Yeah. Like, you don't want that in your set.
No, and you can hear, you know, the conversation starts again, right?
Yeah.
You give that opportunity okay.
Got to drop this one.
You had me the first three, then you played that one song,
mm-hmm.
and that gives them that opportunity. You want to keep that attention throughout, right? So
yeah,
there's definitely. I mean, you have to be sensitive to those types of things in the live show, and then hopefully that comes across in the recordings of it too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's always songs that work better on in the context of a record than live.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you currently playing in any bands at the moment?
No bands, no. Since moving to Vancouver, so it's been just over 8 years now, I haven't really, been a member of a band. The first 4 or 5 years, I worked under some other producers and stuff like that, and really wanted to learn kind of what their whole thing was about, you know, and learn what made them great and made them make great recordings, right? So a lot of it was finding other people to record great music, great bands, great artists, and then going and helping them make that a reality. Currently, I'm doing more in-the-box stuff, even though I still record a lot of live acts and, you know, acoustic instruments and stuff like that. You know, I've been a lot more interested in the past 3 or 4 years on in-the-box stuff. A lot of learning Ableton is definitely one of the biggest parts of that, most definitely, is learning that software and kind of figuring out what that can do and the powers behind that. Something that, like, you know, a Pro Tools or a Logic can't really do, right? And that sort of made me become more of an in-the-box songwriter, artist, performer, you know? So, yeah, I think it's nice to have those other elements. You know, you can bring in a real guitar, you know, acoustic, you can do real vocals, but to also have that in the box kind of stuff is nice if you need it, and if it suits the artist or suits yourself. Definitely a lot of control and a lot of cool sounds you can make out of that, right?
Definitely. I'll admit I'm not too familiar with how Logic or Pro Tools or Ableton work exactly.
Different, yeah,
but I understand Ableton is, you know, the new frontier when it comes to recording bands and artists.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in my mind, I mean, you can tell it was made for and by DJs, right? The start of it is kind of like, you know, this is a tool for DJs, and I mean, producers also use it a lot. A lot of DJ producers obviously use it a lot too, right? And so, you know, a lot of that part of it is, I mean, it's very loop based. It's very usually dance oriented, but you can do, you know, hip hop. You can do, I can see people doing like straight acoustic stuff with vocals and stuff with it. So you can use it like any other DAW. But there are some downsides to that for sure, where Pro Tools or Logic would be more of definitely a stronger tool to be using for like a full band. You can do playlists. You can do, you know, lots of multiple microphones at the same time, that kind of thing. Ableton's not good at that at all. But, you know, being able to take clips, make loops, and start to pull those around, the arrangement side of it and the inspirational kind of creative workflow of it, there's nothing that really surpasses it in my mind. As long as it sort of suits your genre or the types of genres you want to work in, I think that's kind of the key, right?
Yeah, always got to find the right tool for the job.
Yeah, that's
it. Has it worked? And that must be, I think that's a tagline for a hardware store. I can't remember which.
That's fine.
Right tool for the job.
You just gave Home Depot a
new slogan. Yeah, I expect that check, Home Depot, if you're listening.
A little pitch there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes down to the user and, you know, what's in their mind. The tool gets you to a certain point. So I think some people, or sometimes you have people that maybe place too much power on the tools that they're using, right? They always want to buy the new, biggest, best thing. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, people going out and producing full records for Kendrick Lamar on GarageBand on their phone, right? And
yeah.
That's kind of like the reality of it is, you know, it doesn't make better music. It's the person that does it. Choose your tools and just master them, and that's what you need to do, right? And you'll get somewhere different for sure, depending on what you choose, but it's, you know, you just keep doing it.
Absolutely. At the beginning of this program, we mentioned a number of industry pros that you've had the opportunity to work with. What have been some of the big takeaways for you from learning under genuine masters of their craft?
Yeah, and you know, I think it's interesting to see how, you know, they're all very successful in their own right. They've all had, you know, great success with bands, whether, you know, producing, engineering, all that kind of stuff. But they all have kind of different mentalities, different ways of working with people, right? So I think the key thing is, like, there's not one specific way to make music in the studio, right? And to work with an artist or with the band, you know, and it's nice to kind of cater that to the artists themselves, right? A lot of it might come down to, you know, I'm working with this person. They don't want to play to a click track. They just want to play, you know, get a band together. They're going to rehearse for 2-3 days straight for a handful of songs, and then you're going to get into the studio and play it, right? And then you have other things where maybe you want to get them to come in and just, you're going to do the scratch tracks first, so you'll lay down, you know, elements of the song, the vocals to guide everybody, and then you'll start with the drums and start with the bass, edit those super hard, and there's not really like a right way to do it, right? And that's kind of, I mean, that's sort of art in general, right? There's not really a right way to do art. It's just, you just do it.
Yeah, and especially with producers, and I always use this guy as an example just because he's such a unique figure, like Rick Rubin, yeah, for example.
I knew
just
that name was
having,
gonna come out.
Well, it's, you know, it's a common one just because
he's
of his
fave,
his
sure.
approach being so unique. The, you know, just it's like, hey band, just keep playing. I'm gonna chill on your couch and just listen.
Well, that, I mean, when you're going out and finding that kind of greatness to begin with, I think, I mean, if you spoke with Rick about it, I've never met him, but I'd
love
feel
to
like,
meet that guy.
I feel like when you hear him talk, a lot of what he's about is just don't mess it up, right? They already have something great going for them, right? There's a reason why they're meeting Rick Rubin. So his thing is, I feel like, just let them do their thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're the guidance. You're there to help them, but when you demand so much control as a producer, that's when the artist or the project starts to not sound like the artist anymore, right? So you go to their live show and they sound like this way, and then you listen to the record and it's like, that's totally different. What happened? Well, what happened was a producer and an engineer or whatever got to them and they changed it into this, right? And a lot of the times the live show is better, right?
Yeah.
There's an energy there that gets sapped out if you overproduce something. Which can happen.
It can happen.
And some of it is, you know, it's not intentional. It just happens that way. It's just sort of, you know, you want to make it really good. So, and you have all these, you have pretty much no limitations as far as what you can do nowadays. So you can change things endlessly until they're not even like what they were originally, right?
Yeah, which is one of the critiques of some of the digital recording
right.
programs, especially mm-hmm. for some of the more old school artists, like, what? I'm not recording to tape anymore. Back in my day.
Yeah, and I mean, tape is super fun. It's an amazing medium, right? And to be able to, you know, use tape is definitely a bit of a privilege nowadays.
You can afford it, yeah.
I think it's a little bit, it's, you know, there was that Dave Grohl thing that went out a couple years
ago.
Yeah,
Wasting Light, that Foo Fighters record.
And he was like, you know, you just need to get a band in a garage and record, you know, to your tape machines and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm like, how many Porsches did you have to move to out of the garage to get the band in there, Dave? Like, well, it's you know, it's, yeah, and no knocking Dave. Like, that stuff's great, and they do an amazing job, the Foo Fighters. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a laptop and you get a crack of Ableton and you want to make music, then why not go and make music? You don't need a tape machine and a garage and a full rock band to do it in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and there's also that, and I'll say this straight up. Wasting Light is one of, in my opinion, one of the better Foo Fighter
albums.
For
sure, for sure.
The problem I have with it, though, is that you listen to it, and unless you're perhaps someone like you, Cody, I can't really hear the difference between it being on tape and it being like them just actually going into a regular studio with Butch Vig and recording something to digital.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think part of the tape thing, and especially for artists like that, a lot of it is, it's cool to have those limitations, right? Where you can't just go, oh, just nudge that note a little bit and just do that. Like, you have to play it right,
mm-hmm.
and you just have to get the take with tape. I mean, you can get it off tape and then edit it. I feel like for that stuff,
razor blade, an actual, like,
or you could bounce it off the tape into Pro Tools and then edit it that way, right? So I don't think they did much of that. I can't recall if they actually mixed straight from tape for that record, or if they bounced to Pro Tools first. But yeah, I think that's part of the coolness of using that medium is people forget kind of that they just had to play it back then.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And if you're doing it to tape nowadays and just to tape, that you just got to play it, and that's kind of, I mean, that's sort of, you know, putting musicianship above the song, I guess, a little bit, right? It's more about playing it than it is a little bit about how great can we make this song, because you can always make it better if you get it off of the tape, I'd say.
Yeah. But yeah, now I think about that, that does add to kind of, I guess, the mystique and power in some of the older albums that were put to tape. Like, I'm thinking of, like, some mm-hmm. of the classic mid-70s or mid-late 70s like Rush albums where they're recording all that to tape, and you know, those guys are just such monster musicians.
Yeah, exactly. And they would, you know, if they didn't get it right, I mean, they had, you know, a huge budget to just sit in the studio and to be able to do that for days,
months,
and track it to tape, right? Nowadays, I mean, there's a lot of times where, sure, you want that tape sound. I mean, you can find it in a plugin a lot of the times nowadays, right? Invest in some tape plugins. They're getting pretty darn close, for sure.
Yeah.
Or, even better, you could go record it into, say, like a Pro Tools or even Ableton, whatever, bounce it to a tape reel, and then back off the tape. And then you have the tape flavor, but you didn't have to sit there rewinding the tape every time you want to go redo your bass part or whatever. So, yeah, there's definitely... there's ways to get around it. There's ways to still have that cool character of tape and the saturation and the harmonics that come from that
warmth
without having to sit there waiting for your tape reel to reset every time you want to go and do a new song or something, right? So, and, you know, tape is expensive. It's the reality of it.
Oh, exactly. Well, it's hard to come by.
It is. And the machines are just, you know, they're awesome, but they also take a lot to maintain, and they take a lot of time to do that, and you have to pay technicians to come in, and you know, I mean, you can calibrate your tape machines and learn how to do that, but if something goes wrong, you're going to have to pay a premium to have somebody come and fix it, right?
Yeah, I think it's an example of kind of a generational thing. It's just like, oh, well, this was harder for me when I was... young and up-and-coming musician. It's like, yeah, but technology changes. It's designed to make things easier for people.
Yeah, I always try to think of that like, you know, 15-year-old kid who just got a piece of software on his or her laptop, and they just want to make music, right? And there's not a whole... there's no, you know, kind of... like looking down on the fact that you're going to be doing it all on the computer, all in the box. It's just, you know, you just want to express yourself through music.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't knock that at all.
No,
I feel
neither.
Like it, you know, and some artists start that way and they end up going and, you know, being so successful, they can go and record a full horn section and use that in their, you know, any of their EDM productions and stuff like that. Right. So, you know, they probably want to do some of that stuff, but they don't have thousands of dollars to pay those people and for studio time and engineers and all that stuff. So let them sample horns, right? Let them
exactly.
use sample horns. They have a cool part they want to write, they want to play, then do it that way, you know? Just, yeah. I've been saying do it a lot. I feel like we're sponsoring Nike too.
Yeah.
We're Nike sponsored, right, guys?
One of these days.
Hopefully.
Corona. Well, I guess we'll start approaching Home Depot as well. Well, that's for Jasper Saloon. Yep. We're trying to give him a hand.
Doing the Corona pitch?
Find your beach.
But that is the line. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Put a lime in it, Corona.
Wanted to ask you some questions about Fiend Recordings.
Sure.
How did that collective get started?
I started it, and I started the idea of it when I was still going to school in Ontario. I was actually still going to Fanshawe, and I had to have like another goal, or I had to have a thing set up, and was working on sort of what do I do after I'm graduating. You know, I did 4 years of university, I did 2 years at college. It was like, okay, I could be a veterinarian by now, but I am now working in music somehow, so which is awesome.
Now you're a rock doctor.
Yeah, so trying to make that work, and sort of, you know, the name came about just because I, to tell you the truth, I kind of just like the way it sounded. I also kind of like Fiend to me isn't so, I mean, some people think it's kind of an evil kind of term. I always think it's more of like a longing or like a
tenacity.
Yeah. Even to the word like addiction, you know, and everybody has kind of their own addiction and vices and stuff like that. So, you know, some people are addicted to coffee. I could be thrown into that group, right? But I'm also sort of addicted to it. I just need to keep making music, right?
Mm-hmm.
So through Fiend, through sort of coming up with that idea, moving to Vancouver, I started working at a school, Nimbus School of Recording and Media, and I met some people through the school. I mean, I met a great deal of people through the school, most of the people of which you listed there earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a couple other like-minded people, musicians, songwriters, you know, drummers, all that kind of stuff. We all worked together at the school, and sort of brought us all together and started working on projects together. And that was kind of the start of it. It was about, yeah, right when I moved here, I would say about 7 years ago, because it took me about a year to get off the ground and start, you know, meeting people and, you know, making money and doing that kind of stuff. It started out, you know, I was mixing stuff in my apartment, in my living room, right? And, you know, when I worked at the school overnight or something, I would sneak into a studio when all the students were gone, and I would kind of get into the room, and I would do some mixes in there, right? And they have, you know, an SSL 4K, they have an SSL AWS, they have a lot of fun toys, that's for sure, hardware, all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where, when I could, I would go in there and try to master my craft after kind of during, you know, learning from some of those industry pros, and sort of, you know, making my own way. And now, you know, since then it's moved into a full-fledged studio. We have a studio just at Commercial and Powell there, and that's been going on for about 5 years now, with the full-fledged space and keeping that going. So we rent a space there, and we have all of our gear there, and just kind of, you know, make records and work on our own music. And yeah, I do, you know, every once in a while I do some voiceover stuff, like whatever you got to do, right? But I've been really fortunate is to find some very, very great artists and some very kind souls that want to make music with me. So it's been great. Yeah, it's definitely been a really big couple years, the last couple, for Fiend, for sure, and for me.
And what have been some of the most notable projects that Fiend has released since you guys started back in 2010?
I was going to write a list, actually, because I knew I was going to forget some stuff. So I'm just going to kind of go off the top of the head. I'm going to go for more of like more recent stuff. More recently, I have been working with Desiree Dawson, who won the CBC Searchlight in 2016. We've been doing some songwriting together. I produced a track with her a couple months ago that was just released last month, and that's been getting some good traction. It's been getting some plays on the CBC. I think it's number 18 on the CBC Top 20 right now.
Yeah, CBC loves Desiree.
They do, yeah, for sure. And there's definitely a good reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, very, very excited about that song. I met her through actually another artist I was working with at that time, Zach Kleisinger. And he's been having some very great success, a lot of traction on Spotify, getting some good plays and playing some shows. He just did a sort of Cross Canada tour recently. And so we're going to be starting in the studio on a single, I think, here in the next couple months, him and I and his band. And who about Chersey? I've been working with Chersey for quite some time, about 4 years now. And we're slowly sort of trickling music out from her. She's put out three singles that have been doing quite well, and you know, there's hopefully some placements involved, some TV stuff, some movie stuff potentially. Rowan Porter is another artist I was working with just recently. Very, very talented, up-and-coming singer-songwriter. Ursa Day, folk artist. Very, very good as well. She has three songs coming out in about, what is today, guy? I think 3 days. I think it comes out on the
August
21st. 18th.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is 3 days from now.
Yeah, so 21st, she has three songs coming out you could take a look at. Very, very great stuff. Just such a smooth, soulful voice. It's kind of endless, right? And I mean, it's kind of nice to forget about some of that stuff, not because I want to forget, but it's because there's
sheer volume.
I love doing it a lot, and it's kind of nice to be reminded, oh yeah, I did that project 3 years ago. I was, you know, really, I am really excited about it, and even going back and revisiting and listening to it again, you know, you hear it with different ears, right? And you kind of get, it's just like, it's like you're a different person listening to it after you've been inside of it for those, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months, depending on how many songs and how much the productions take, right?
Definitely. What projects do you have in the works right now?
I've been sort of slowing up a little bit. I'm still working with Desiree on some songs. I'll be working with Zach on a single here coming up. Probably some new Rowan stuff in the near future. Who else was I? You know, a lot of what I've been working on lately, like I was saying, has been more in the box stuff. I'm actually, and I've been doing that for quite some time, even when I was in college and university. But now I'm taking on a little bit. I'll be teaching part time more at the school and in the electronic music production program at Nimbus there. So I've been doing a lot more of my own sort of electronic music productions. And it's called Nunu. It's kind of a newer thing. It's been around for almost a year now. And just sort of releasing little bits here and there. A lot of it is just kind of, you know, mastering that side of things, right? Trying to get into more of that EDM sort of mindset. A little bit of hip-hop, a little bit of EDM. It's definitely pretty eclectic. But I've been enjoying it. A little bit more satisfying to be writing stuff predominantly, writing with artists. That's what I've been taking more time doing too, is more songwriting sessions together. Had a couple artists from Montreal come over. So, you know, it's nice to have a little bit more invested and a little bit more control over how the song takes shape, right, when you're starting a brand new song with somebody.
Yeah, definitely. Trying to think of what would you compare some of the new sounds stuff to, like any EDM artists? You could list a bunch and I'd probably be like, oh yeah, that one.
It's not as good, but you know, it's fairly pop driven, so I would say like it's aiming for stuff kind of like Zed stuff, a little bit of, I mean, even RL Grimes new stuff.
Is RL Grimes new stuff more accessible?
I would say so.
Okay.
Some of the newer stuff I've heard, at least from some of the newer releases, there's a bit more collab. Definitely some of it's pretty hard, pretty grimy, but
I was,
you know,
at,
I've always been a big Diplo fan, and mm-hmm. Skrillex and those guys too, obviously.
I was gonna say, I was at Pemberton a few years ago, and I was only there for one day, but RL Grime was playing in one of the evening sets, and the tricky bastard terrified me as I was walking past the stage he was playing at. He just threw in this gigantic train sound effect. So I thought this train was like barreling through the festival.
Amazing.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see that guy live.
The light show looked crazy. I think I was heading to another stage, but yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I got to, who did I see? I mean, Swedish House Mafia, when I went to Coachella years and years and years ago, was mm-hmm. quite, I mean, those things are, you know, you barely get to see the artists, you barely get to really see them up there, but it's the whole experience, right? You're in this huge crowd, flames everywhere, all the lights, and so you can tell why it's such a popular sort of event, you know? It's definitely that, you know, that rock and roll band times 100.
Mm-hmm. They've really kind of outdone some of the, even some of the bigger stadium bands.
Yeah, most definitely.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, it's just such an experience, right?
Yeah. Are there any folks that work in the Vancouver music industry that you would recommend we have on the show for a future installment of Pacific Sound Profile?
Definitely some of those, I mean, artist-wise, for sure, like Desiree, who I had listed, Zach Kleisinger. It'd be awesome to see Rowan on the show, too, Rowan Porter, and Carolyn Ursaday. We were going to have Ben on as well, but Ben lives in Montreal now, right? And he has been a big proponent of Fiend for years and years and years. We've worked on countless projects together on top of his own music as well. So if he was in town, I would say Ben Rowley would be awesome to have in. His band is Super Pyramid. Industry folk, maybe. I think you guys just had... Like, you were speaking with Paul Beckler recently,
yep,
right?
He was on not last... 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you had Nigel on recently as well.
Yeah, we did a video interview with Nigel earlier this week.
Oh,
and
cool.
I think we're still going through the editing phase for that video, but that should be up on our YouTube channel, Pacific
awesome.
Sound Media, matter of weeks or so. Don't have an exact timeline yet, but it should be coming out sometime, at least sometime in September.
Sweet, sweet. Yeah, I would say, he's the reason I'm out here, realistically. We went to school together at Fanshawe, actually, in the Music Industry Arts program, and he started working for Garth, and they needed some people to help around the school, so I flew out here, I think, the year after him, and I've been here ever since. So I'm trying to think just off the top of my head of any other industry folk you could have. Have you guys spoken with Jeff Zip?
Not yet.
He works for, him and Matt, they do White Hart Studios. And they're next-door neighbors, actually.
Oh.
Be awesome to see him on here. How about Dave Genn? Dave Genn's another neighbor, that's why I bring
I haven't had Dave Genn either.
It'd be cool.
I forget that there's more studios than you think there are.
Just in that just one little half-block area that I'm in, there's, Steve Bays just moved out, but from Hot Hot Heat, he was there. Ryan Dahl's there.
Studio Row, as I call it. It's all it's like that kind of industrial parky area that's all actual just studio spaces.
Exactly. And you don't want anybody to know that, right?
True.
So you don't publicize it. But there are, at least, I would say like 20 different studios from varying sizes. You got the big room in there, all within that little half block radius.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to call it the greenhouse community because greenhouse studios isn't really... it's not really a thing anymore in that large room is now Rain City Recorders, who they would be great to talk to.
Yeah,
too.
I need to follow up with Jesse Kander.
With Jesse,
Jesse
and
on the show.
Stu would be awesome to have on there. And they've been doing stuff in the city for years and years and years, right? Back at the Hive and stuff when Colin Stewart was here and before he moved to the island and those types of things. So, yeah, there's just... especially, it seems like a pretty fractured music scene, right? Because you have all these little scenes popping up, hip-hop scenes, metal scenes. But the recording scene is even is a little bit more inclusive in that it's smaller and everybody kind of knows each other,
mm-hmm.
I think, right? Or knows somebody who knows somebody, I would say.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. That's what we're trying to do is trying to bridge those gaps.
Yeah, for sure.
Build some bridges.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a great job.
Yeah, we'll share a Corona at Home Depot with these guys, and it'll be great.
We'll have to wear a Nike.
Of course.
Yeah. Naturally. So how can listeners check out your work and keep up with everything Fiend Recordings is doing?
So, you can. I have a website for Fiend. It's fiendrecordings.ca. I'm also on Instagram, Facebook. It's fairly easy to search for it, just Fiend Recordings. Most of the newer stuff I will post on, the Fiend website or subsequently like the Facebook, those types of things. I try to give links to either Spotify or iTunes or both, right? You never really know who's going to be listening to what. Sometimes it's a YouTube video.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all on there if you want to check it out.
Good stuff. Well, thank you, Cody. This has been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much.
And our next headliner single for this episode comes from the garage rock power trio, The Dead Zones. This is the first single off their upcoming second EP, suitably titled The Dead Zones 2, and it delivers a metric ton of sludgy riffage. This is Vacant Minds.
We'll be right back.
we're back. You're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was The Dead Zones with their latest single, Vacant Minds. Can't wait to check out their next EP, which should be coming out, I think they said, late this month or late next month. I can't remember. Well, it's coming out soon. That's going to be great. So this week's featured guest is folk singer-songwriter Haley Blaze. Haley began her career as a solo artist in 2016 with the release of her first EP, Late Bloomer. Her latest release, Let Yourself Go, which dropped earlier this year, sees Haley develop her sound as she's grown to incorporate folk rock and pop elements into her songwriting. Haley has had a very busy year this year as she has toured across Canada to promote her new EP, played at the 2018 edition of the Canadian Music Week in Toronto alongside Pacific Sound Radio guests Hotel Mira, Old Soul Rebel, and many others, and performed at this year's Catalano Street Party. Haley is closing out the summer with a bang as she's set to take the stage at the inaugural Skookum Festival on September 7th. Before we welcome Haley into the studio, we are going to play the first single off of her latest EP, Let Yourself Go. This is Small Foreign Faction. Back, you're listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That was the first singles off of the new EP by our featured guest Haley Blaze. That was Small Foreign Faction, and we have Haley in the studio with us.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going well. I'm excited for you guys to find out that I've never once talked for an hour about myself. in my life, and you're going to find out the hard way.
Mm, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I do have a question about other occasions in which you've shared knowledge about yourself with other people, but we'll get to that. When did you start writing and performing your own music?
Oh, young, very young. I was young, just a young, in my younger and more vulnerable years. I was probably 13, 14.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. You should know. You know everything. Fact check.
No, not everything.
Yeah, I was a youngin'. I did actually classical music until I was 18. Classical opera.
Ooh.
And then I kind of kept it in my back pocket that I was going to quit and do independent folk-based stuff. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I imagine the opera training's been helpful.
Yeah. You kind of lose the technique after a few years of trying to get that indie singer-songwriter vibe.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was good. It's definitely something I've carried with me and keep in mind for performances, and especially on tour, because it's hard singing every night for hours. So, yeah.
Well, I imagine especially with the opera training, a lot of the voice maintenance techniques that they teach you have mm-hmm. been useful.
Yeah, definitely. Conserving the voice.
And what bands and artists have shaped your approach to music? Especially, you know, you're not listening to Pagliacci.
There's a lot. Currently, an inspiration for me, just like songwriting-wise, has been Phoebe Bridgers. She's kind of a new folk artist on the scene. But, I don't know, anytime people ask me questions like that, right off the bat, I'm like, oh, I've never heard of music before. It just completely goes from my mind. But yeah, Phoebe's really great. She's a fine, talented lyricist.
Mm-hmm. I guess that would fall into a similar question I have. Who are some of your favorite songwriters and why?
Andy Schaaf, definitely. He's from Victoria. Are you familiar?
Mm-hmm. Name rings a bell. I'm trying to remember what band he plays in.
He played in Wake Owl.
Okay.
Like many a year ago, mm-hmm. and now he does his solo stuff. Mm-hmm. And his debut album, Bear of Bad News, is like my number one album. His Ooh. Storytelling is like just so vivid. And he writes songs, which I can really relate to, about things that are not necessarily about him. It's just kind of like an idea that he has in his head, or like a storyline just set to music, like fictional, which is cool. Yeah.
Good stuff. Now this is kind of tied into, you know, you saying that this is your first time on like on a podcast talking in long form about yourself. You are an avid vlogger, and
right.
How'd you get your start? Yeah, how'd you get your start vlogging?
That started when I graduated high school and all of my studious friends went off to university, and never was in the cards for me. So I just started posting on YouTube. Just kind of came across this community where people can create and express themselves, and it was also a really great platform to showcase my music and stuff, because I'm from a small town, I'm from Kelowna, so it was hard to really get myself out there, and the internet is a good place to do that, I've heard.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you make the move from Kelowna to Vancouver?
January 2015, so coming up on it's like 3.5 years ago, math, yeah?
That sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
And what inspires you to blog? Do you usually have something that you want to talk about before you start recording, or do you usually just turn on the camera and see what happens?
I pretty much wing it, unless told otherwise by, like, the big man, big brother, or something like that, whatever I have to advertise to the world. But, yeah, it's mostly just, my YouTube is kind of a fine line between this way that I can only express myself, or else I would combust, I think. So, yeah, it's like this kind of version of me that is, unless you knew me in real life, you'd know that that's the only place I can do that. Does that make sense? I've had like 3 cups of coffee today, and there's a lot of words that I'm trying to piece together.
Well, is it, let me see if I can respond to that. It's kind of like
that's kind of
like
conversation I've ever had.
It's kind of like having a journal, but it's more open. It's like, totally. Hey, here, everybody, here's my journal. Here's what I've been doing.
Exactly.
Lately.
Yeah, and I wouldn't put it past me to actually read from my journal on there either.
There you go. Yeah. Did you have journals, like actual written journals, when you were younger?
I tried to. I actually was talking about this recently. I tried to keep a journal because I thought it would be a great way to look back on my life when I'm older, but every time I would write entries in it, I would be afraid that someone would read it, and so I was trying to make it entertaining for whoever mm-hmm. would come across it, and it never came off authentic, so I guess that was a good segue into YouTube, because people were actually watching.
Yeah.
Somehow I knew.
And I guess this is just coming from my sort of perspective. I have trouble, for example, with apps like Snapchat and even Instagram, where mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I don't, you know, is my day-to-day life interesting enough to share with other people? So what do you do to kind of, like, do you just go with, like, this is just what I'm doing today?
Yeah, I just force it in their faces.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
let's see. Where am I here? Oh, I guess with vlogging, has it made it easier to promote your music and more easily build a following?
Yeah, definitely, because with my channel, I can post a lot of different things that can contribute to a different audience, like a handful. Not everyone who's coming to my channel is there for music, but then they'll find out that I have music and they didn't expect it. So, yeah, there's a lot. It's a great platform to build off of, for sure, because you can invite all these people in different walks of life to come and watch you, and then you're also like, oh, and I have a song on Spotify and iTunes. Download it today.
Yeah, and it's a good mix where your channel's not just the music promotion's part of it, but it's not exclusively what it's about.
Totally.
It's not like you have a cover channel, even though you do have some cover videos.
I do, yeah. I haven't done one in a while. It was kind of... Yeah, I'm trying to strictly... The music that now I put out on my channel, I'm trying to make strictly just my own.
Mm-hmm.
To thine self be true, I suppose. But, yeah. Yeah, it's a good place. YouTube. Who knew? The internet.
One thing I also noticed with the videos they did watch... would you say it's a dry sense of humor, I suppose?
Yes.
And it's an observational.
Yes, I'd say that's correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I don't know if there's a way to delve a little bit more into that, but
kind of calculate my humor or dis what's the word I'm looking for?
Distill?
Describe? Dissect?
Dissect?
Yeah, let's dissect humor. What makes someone funny?
Oh, it's so subjective. That's the problem.
Yeah. It'd be so hard to explain like memes. So hard to explain them to my parents.
I've thought about that in terms of like kind of imagining an art gallery in the future.
Yeah, what would this chunk of time where like memes and all that internet humor is really prevalent be hard?
Will they hang certain memes on like on the wall, and will they have will they have like a headset that people will put on, and then they'll just filter through all the captions that people threw on them?
I only recently understood what memes really were. Let's not talk about memes. That's too much. That's too on the nose for my internet personality.
I suppose. I mean, it's inescapable. I'm surprised that
that's true.
Surprised that we haven't forced our own memes onto somebody. By we, I mean our own program.
Do you want to be personal save on meats memes?
Save on memes?
Save on memes.
There
we go.
God, so close. Stole it. I was so close to getting that.
I don't know. Maybe some other shows have picked up on that or have gone forward with it. But, you know, we're on this platform, but we kind of have, I don't know, we kind of do our own thing in a way.
I think every show kind of does their own thing and kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like autonomous city-states. Part of the union. I don't know. Is there any advice you'd give to someone who is considering getting into vlogging?
Sure, I would just say upload it. Just press upload. It's a free place to express yourself, and if that's what you want to do, then I'm not going to stop you. No one stopped me. Maybe they should have, but they didn't, and here we are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just do it.
What has the reaction been like to your subscriber base to the increased exposure that your music has recently been receiving?
What do you mean?
So let me see if I can rephrase that question.
Like, how have I been telling people to listen to it, or
no, like,
how have they received the fact that I'm pushing it in their faces?
See if I can rephrase that. Let's see.
It's hot in here, so I'm having...
It's okay.
We're figuring out how to read these phrases in my mind. Whoa. More coffee now.
What's the response been like from your subscriber base to...
Oh, yeah, it's been good.
Yeah.
It's been good.
It's an easier way. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah.
That's what I thought you were trying to say, but yeah. I didn't know if I was reading into it too much. Yeah, it's been good. I feel like I try to make it... Like I said before, a lot of people that subscribe to me don't necessarily know that I'm a musician. Like, I always get comments saying, like, oh, I have been listening to your song. It's been on my playlist for months now. I'm just cluing in that it's you. So maybe I should do a better job of kind of making it more clear that that's my main kind of goal and passion in life is music. But those who do know are... And those who aren't sick of me shamelessly promoting it all the time, yeah, it's always been great. I've been really blessed in my career online that I've never really had negative instances, really. It's all been pretty good.
Yeah.
And knock on wood, because... Oh, no.
You're in the minority there, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. I really was expecting and bracing myself to... be thrust upon the haters, but it's been pretty good.
Them haters. Yeah. Well, that's good that you've been avoiding them, they've been avoiding you, I guess.
Yeah, I found the good ones.
Yeah.
The nice, calm folk on the web.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to hear a live song.
Right now?
Yeah.
Sure.
I know you brought your uke.
I did.
Ukulele. Ukulele.
Because I'm doing that little thing after this.
Yes, you're doing the sound.
I hope you don't mind hearing two songs twice. Like, a song I'm going to do there.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay. I'm going to have to do this. Can you hear this?
How's that sounding, Travis?
It sounds... Sounds.
There's sounds coming?
It sounds.
That's good. Because this uke is pretty...
Yeah. We'll just move James's mic towards it.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Let's do it.
What song are you going to...
I'm going to do a song called House Before the Party. Oh my gosh, I'm going to put my phone away. Someone is... That's like 30 text messages I just got.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're just... Wow, when you're just so famous. Okay, I have no place to put it.
Someone's popular.
Yeah, this song is called House Before the Party. It's from a demo EP I put out around this time last year, in like September last year, I think. And I haven't really gotten a chance to fully record them, but I like these songs, so you can hear it online. Yeah, everything that I ever do is online, because that's where I live. Will I ever find the feeling? Will I ever find the feeling? The one that Josie said was worth waiting for before she passed out on the kitchen floor at my house before the party. At my house before the party. Sweet.
I like it.
Thank you.
That was Haley Blaze live in the studio, and I forgot the name of the song because I was clearly paying attention.
Dude, you were freaking zoning out. It's called House Before the Party. Yeah.
Great. That song's online?
It's on Spotify.
Nice.
Bandcamp, iTunes, YouTube, Twitter, Snapchat,
everywhere.
MySpace. Yeah, it's always interesting. I have a full band now, mm-hmm. so whenever I'm doing these solo sets, it feels like I'm really even more exposed than I am used to being. It's cool. It's kind of cool going back to my roots of just being a little solo ukulele wielding gal. So thanks.
Bringing back to your roots.
Yeah, truly.
We like to do. And speaking of which, on your first EP, Late Bloomer, you address subjects like death, adolescence, mm-hmm. identity. Were these lyrical subjects drawn from direct personal experience, or were you doing more storytelling?
That EP kind of marked the transition from me writing songs about just storytelling to actually delving in and doing a lot more personal reflection. So yeah, that was like fully all just raw emotion. And yeah, it was a really therapeutic experience. And now I'm really learning how to channel all that emotion into songwriting, because I think before I would just repress it and write about fictional stuff that wasn't actually personal to me. But now, yeah, that's kind of all I do.
Mm-hmm. And your follow-up release, Let Yourself Go,
mm-hmm.
which I've probably said the title of that EP.
Keep saying
about
it.
About 10, 12
Scream
times.
It.
Yep, Let Yourself Go. that EP is a lot more fleshed out instrumentally, mm-hmm. feels more mature in some respects. Did you intend on writing and recording a release so distinctly different from your first batch of songs, or is that just more of a natural progression for you?
Yeah, I think it was kind of inevitable for me to make the change from just a solo sound to more of a fully fleshed out band. And so I was introduced to my now drummer, Brendan Doyle, through one of my best friends, because he's in his band Electric Sex Panther, which is from Victoria.
It's an amazing name.
Yeah, and they're an amazing band. And yeah, I was introduced to him, and I showed him my music, and he was like, hey, I can dabble a little bit on the drums and see if you like what that sounds like, and you should meet Trevor, my friend Trevor. He's like a master at all instruments. He can help you with it, and he can produce it if you want to make an EP. So that's Trevor Lang, who produced and engineered the whole EP, and now he's my lead guitar keyboardist. Yeah, it all just kind of organically happened, very fatefully. I believe in destiny now. So, yeah, it's good.
And what was it like working with Trevor at Rumpus Room Records?
Oh, good. You got it. You got notes. it was great. Yeah, I learned a lot about just the whole engineering, like mastering, mixing process.
Voodoo magic.
Exactly. It really is. It's something I'm learning, but I still don't understand how it happens and how it's so magical. But yeah, I'm excited to work with them again. We're hopefully getting back in the studio next weekend, I think. Actually, a week from today. And we're going to start the process of the next thing, the next record.
Nice.
Yeah.
That should be good.
Yeah,
let's see. On your website, Late Bloomer, previous EP, is described as being more focused on the grief of a former self, and Let Yourself Go being more of a commentary on where you're going after blooming. What does the title itself, Let Yourself Go, should have a counter going, mean to you on a deeper level?
Yeah, that's like 10 times. It started off, it's based on one of the songs from the EP, Let Yourself Go, that's 11, and that kind of is a commentary on just like the way maybe I or just individuals are perceived in society if they're not traditionally pleasing to the eye, you know? Basically, it's
aesthetically?
Yeah,
or
aesthetically or just like visually. Like, for instance, myself. Maybe my mother would say I've let myself go sometimes at family dinners. And so it's kind of a commentary on that, but then as we're recording it and just like recording the whole EP and just that process, it became more of like a mantra to just let yourself go and, like, mentally, physically, just be a little bit more free and open to things. So there's a, when we play that song live, we have extended the ending of the song. It's kind of like a jammy outro, maybe like a minute and a half of just the guys just going off, and I just run around the stage, really letting myself go, jumping and pirouetting.
It's a Grateful Dead moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, the way you describe it, it's almost like let yourself go is kind of like a almost like a Buddhist sort of thing about
truly,
like, just releasing from the external
release
world.
Release all that negative energy.
Yeah. And what has your reaction been to how well the EP has been received?
I'm very pleased. Yes, I'm having a good time. It's taken us on tour, which is something I've always wanted to do. Like, we did a Cross Canada tour to Canadian Music Week. And, without that EP coming into fruition, that wouldn't have happened. So I'm very happy that it happened, that I let myself go.
Definitely. And what was your experience like touring across Canada this year? What were some of the highlights?
All of it was like one big highlight. It was just me and four men in a van for hours. We did a lot of like house shows, which were probably, I guess, could be considered a highlight because it's just a lot more intimate and fun. I loved the house shows. We had a really good time in Montreal and Edmonton. Surprisingly, a great time in Calgary, which I don't want to... I don't know if you guys are from Alberta?
No.
No? Okay. Well, we weren't expecting to have that much fun or to be that, like, interested in the city. But it was really cool. I really like Calgary. Wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. And your most recent music video, 17, for the song 17, it's got clips.
Yeah.
From tour.
Yeah, it's kind of like the whole tour. I was filming periodically throughout the tour just to kind of maybe make a video on it, and I didn't know how I was going to edit it together because everything was so random, and I was like, am I going to have to narrate this video? And that would just be so weird. And then when I was editing it, I was like, this would be great for a music video. So it's kind of a little homage. I don't know.
I can't remember how it's pronounced.
Yeah, we're fine.
Yeah, brain's melting.
Yeah.
It's the heat.
But yeah, I thought it was perfect for the music video because that song is all about me wanting to be this person that I kind of put off being or like doing things that I procrastinated on. I've always wanted to go on tour. I've always wanted to make a record like this. So yeah, that was perfect. Very fitting.
Yeah. And I guess how much footage would you say you had to crop down from?
Quite a bit, about a month's worth.
Like in literal hours and minutes?
In literal hours, an entire month's worth. We filmed every hour of the day.
Oh, my gosh.
No, it was maybe like 5 hours of footage.
Okay.
Not too much. And it actually...
My sarcasm meter isn't working. It's broken.
Yeah, it actually didn't take too long to edit, which was surprising. It just kind of... It was meant to be, I guess. It all lined up really perfectly.
Would you ever consider releasing it in kind of like a movie length, like tour documentary?
Maybe, yeah. That's what I thought I was going to do. So maybe I will, as like a part two.
Yeah, because you could even do it in a way that's kind of free form and,
totally,
and artsy.
Yeah.
Because I think Radiohead have like a concert documentary that's just super alienating and weird because it's Radiohead. And there's another band I really like. Not sure if you're into noise rock, but there's this Austin-based noise rock band called Lightning Bolt, and they have a concert film called The Power of Salad and Milkshakes.
I love that. I love that for them. I've never heard of that band, but that sounds very cool.
I recommend checking it out. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah?
They're like a two-piece band. Drummer is named Brian Chippendale. He's a nutcase.
That's not a real last name. Is that really his last
name? That's really his last name.
I love him.
He's a...
My soulmate, maybe.
Wonderful artsy weirdo. He does vocals, kind of, and he's also the drummer, but he has like this apparatus that he kind of straps to his head while he's going at it, and the bassist has guitar strings on his bass.
And, whoa.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah, it's
how quirky.
It's abrasive stuff.
That sounds noisy and rocky. Yeah.
But I was thinking, you know, with the footage that you have, you could maybe do something
definitely
similar.
Definitely.
Maybe matching the tone of your vlogs, maybe.
Oh, no. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Let's see. Where am I here? Speaking of videos, you do have a number of music videos that you've directed yourself. Mm-hmm. Where do your ideas come from?
I just pluck them out of the air. I have my brother. He's a filmmaker, Matthew Blay. He does the production of all my videos.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been blessed to have every music video I've done has been pretty much free. And so I'm really excited to keep him on board, but maybe like move to a higher production value and see what it's like to actually pay for a music video and see what that product is. Because I feel like so far it's been very DIY, homemade, family band kind of vibe to it. But yeah, I get a lot of my ideas from him because he has a very cinematic eye. He's very avant-garde. A lot of his films are too deep for me to even consider what they're about. So, yeah.
I do have to ask about one of the videos, or at least one of them. The Good Feeling music video. That has to be the most depressing game of basketball I've ever watched.
Yes.
Was that a collaborative idea between you and your brother?
No, he actually wasn't involved in that one. That I did with my friend Grant Bell. I was living in LA last spring for about 3.5 months. And while I was there, I met a lot of new friends that were comedians or actors. And I got to know them, and not only were they really funny, but they were also very sad. So I feel like a lot of, you know, they just had real emotions. You never really think comedians have anything else to offer but laughs. But they're all very tortured.
Yeah.
And so I had the idea of putting them all in one place and making them sad and playing basketball and fighting over each other. And I don't know what it really means, but it was fun.
At least it's open to interpretation.
Yeah, truly. Yeah.
But you mentioned something interesting there that, you know, I don't know, maybe I can only speak for myself, but I've always thought that, like, comedians especially, almost more than musicians, can have more baggage.
No, yeah, it's true. I don't know if we can dissect that either. Let's just keep dissecting comedy and comedians. This is a good theme that's happening. But yeah, I think I can agree that maybe the more tortured folk.
Yeah.
It's hard to, I guess when your life is making laughs, it's hard to get into touch with your emotions. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just, well, it's always been this kind of narrative, I suppose, that's circulated around about like, oh, well, you know, the best art comes from the most tortured people.
True.
Which I don't think it entirely applies all the time, but
no.
It certainly can be reflective of the art that is created by certain individuals.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'm considered tortured. Although my username on my YouTube channel is Tortured Teenage Style, which came when I first started it in like 2013 or something. And you can't change that once you've...
Really?
No, you can't.
Ooh, that would actually explain a few things.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube channel I follow, and this guy does like... He does videos where he rips on like sports teams that are like run by idiots and stuff like that. He just like makes fun of like, oh, this team sucks, ha ha ha. And his YouTube handle is Urinating Tree. Of course, he can't change it, so he's like, all right,
stuck with that for life. Yeah. You can change like the way it's displayed. Like right now, it's just my name, and that's how you can search me. But if you really like typed in the URL, you'd have to do Tortured Teenage Style, which I deeply regret.
There's worse. Like
yeah,
Urinating Tree.
Urinating Tree.
Yeah, that one's pretty bad. Like, I'm just
honestly a good band name.
Yeah, I think he's getting sponsorships now though, so he might be in a position to maybe go after a band if they steal that though. But who knows?
Oh,
Are you sponsored at all on your vlog?
Yes, sometimes I'll get brand deals for people who they're like, share this product in one of your videos and we'll give you X amount of money. So that's good for rent. In Vancouver?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The AdSense, people think that a lot of the money from YouTube videos comes from advertisements, like the ads that pre-roll on your videos.
Yeah.
That's nothing. That's literally nothing. It's a sense.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's kind of like...
It's a hard life out there.
Yeah. Spotify is kind of the most double-edged of the swords.
Yeah. Yeah. That's painful.
Yeah.
But you gotta do it for the art. Maybe that's how I'm tortured. I'm just broke.
That's most of us.
Yeah. Hey. Cheers to that.
Let's see. Where am I? Oh, another music video I wanted to ask about. Video for Remove Tag, which was directed by your brother, Matthew Blaze. Certainly a lot more straightforward in terms of directly referencing the song lyrics.
Yeah.
Did you have a hand in developing that video as well, or is that more your brother's idea?
It was definitely collaborative. I mean, that song is just pretty, I think, the song and the video are pretty transparent. It's just about a really horrible photo being taken of you when you're extremely inebriated. So we just kind of tried to translate that and just, like, had a big party at my house and showed the after effects of said party and what happens and the unfortunate photos that are captured. It's pretty just,
I have to say for, I guess, the production with your brother, small scale, I suppose, it looks pro.
Yeah, we had a good team.
Yeah.
He used to be kind of just like me. We were all very just like, this is my art, so I'm going to do it solely. But now he's really expanding to have this, his own little team behind him. Like, his fiance, my sister-in-law, is like the producer. He's the director. He has a cinematographer on quote-unquote staff. So it's good.
Nice.
He's expanding.
Yeah. Does he have a production name?
They have a production company that releases a series of short films called Cetal Cinema. But in just, like, his own kind of work, I think it's just his namesake, Matt. That's it. Five Matts. Matt.
Nice. Has he only done music videos for you, or has he done music videos for other artists?
So far, he's only done it for me. Okay. And then he focuses a lot on his own, like, short films.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of, like, festival circuits and stuff with his films. So I think if anyone's listening and looking for music videos, my brother is good.
That's just,
I can vouch.
Cool. Because I was going to say, love to bring him on.
Oh, totally.
For a Pacific Sound Profile.
He would love it.
Yeah, because we've only had one music video director on, and we want to bring more directors
on.
I've been trying to get in touch with, I hope he's listening. Probably not, but love to get in touch with Lester Lyons Hookham.
Love Lesty.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah.
He's amazing. Like, just the stuff he's done with, like, with Peach Pit especially, it's just incredible.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say his name before you did.
Need to bring that guy on.
He's a Vancouver gem for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to hear another song.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's see. Try and think. What's a good one? Make sure this is in tune, actually. Hello?
It's my favorite song, tuning.
Yeah. This is actually my number one hit. Okay, I'll do one off of Let Yourself Go. I think that's only fitting.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Should we set up?
Yeah.
This is called Best Thing. And it's from Let Yourself Go. That's the 20th time we've said that.
Just because. And tattoo. I will come with you to get your old tattoo fixed. Cause you have been loved before. If I ever love another, I would beg to meet the mother. Cause you have got the coolest one. And Josie took the photo of us, the one where we were laughing just because.
Listening to Pacific Sound Radio. That's Haley Blees live in the studio with Best Thing off
Best
of
Thing.
Latest EP, Let Yourself Go.
There it is.
15, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're on making a record.
For those listeners who are familiar with the studio version, I had the wood blocks playing in my head.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's always so weird playing them solo, especially the ones that actually have the full band.
Mm-hmm.
The first song I played was definitely just very stripped down version of it. Or it is already pretty stripped down, but this one was very stripped.
Yes.
A naked song.
Nudist song.
Nudist song. My brand.
Yep. When it comes to, as I kind of mentioned with that song, the wood blocks, I think it's 17 with the woodwinds on it.
Mm-hmm.
Was that largely like Trevor's idea to throw those little flourishes on there, or was that
Trevor's? Was definitely with the little recorder flute. I can't remember if it was an actual
sort of woodwind.
Yeah. I can't remember. If it may have been just like a toy recorder that he found in his house. Actually, I think it was like, I don't know. Yeah, and it was anyway. Yes, that was all Trevor. He just kind of, we were playing around. He was like playing along with it on this little thing, and I was like, we're going to put that in. Thank you for that idea. But the wood blocks at the beginning were actually in the demo version of Best Thing that I sent Brennan, because that was the only way I knew how to like work with drums, because I can't work in that mindset quite yet. I'm still like leaving it all up to him, so I just had these like little dinky wood blocks that I used at the beginning, and he's like, we can keep that in. Like, that's cool. So, yeah.
Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. As we mentioned, you started out as a solo artist, but your live show has grown to include a full live band. What do your bandmates bring to the table as a team?
Everything. Without them, I would be nothing. They are my sons. They're all, so, they all have different bands themselves. Like, they're in a multitude of bands. And so they understand it all, which is great. Like, they understand the professional, like, they bring a professionalism to this, the literal stage that I myself have yet to assimilate to. But yeah, they're all just like super talented musicians, probably the most talented I've ever met in my life personally. So they bring everything.
And did they all play on the EP?
It was just me, Trevor, and Brennan for the recordings. But yeah, live it's an extra two. We have Galen McMillan on bass and Will Robson on rhythm guitar.
Nice. And I guess, are they all going to be joining you in the studio for the next project?
I think they will if they're open to it, but then also Trevor can pretty much play every instrument, so to reduce on a, like, to make it as fast as possible, because they're all so busy, mm-hmm. we might just do the old trio again in the studio.
For those, for listeners who want to check out their other bands, what are the bands that they play in?
Brennan and Galen are both in Electric Sex Panther and also Diamond Cafe, which is another artist from Victoria. He's amazing, kind of very princey, disco, R&B, funk vibes. I don't even know how to... I'm really bad at describing genre.
There's so many island bands that I wish we could have on our show.
Oh,
one
man.
Of these days, we're gonna do a field trip episode.
Really? You
yeah,
should.
I think we need to. Because there's so many Victoria bands that we'd love to have on the show, but it's hard to convince them to come out
yeah,
on a Sunday.
True, true. And I think, like, right now, especially just with the artists and bands that are there, like, I'm obsessed with the Victoria music scene. I'm, like, always there attending shows, and I'm always just there because 80% of my band lives there, but I'm kind mm-hmm. of more into it than the Vancouver scene right now.
Yeah, it's a different vibe.
Totally.
Yeah.
They're on island time, and I love it.
Yeah. Well, and it's it's also just a more tight-knit scene because it's just
smaller yeah.
group of musicians. So everyone plays in each other's bands.
Yeah, I love it.
That happens in the metal scene here, but not as much in other bands.
Right.
Let's see. I did want to ask, what was your experience like playing Canadian Music Week?
That was really fun. It was kind of daunting because the whole tour was leading up to that show. And that's the reason we kind of made the tour. We're like, well, we're going there. We may as well just hop in a van and make a tour out of it instead mm-hmm. of just doing one show. And so we're like, hopefully it's a good show or else this tour, was it worth it? Which obviously, yeah, regardless of the show in Toronto, it would have been worth it. I had so much fun on the tour. I think it was a fantastic time for me and the band to just kind of bond too, because we're still so new playing with each other. But it was a really great show. It was fun. A great turnout. And really cute little venue. I can't remember where we played now.
Somewhere in Toronto.
It's somewhere in Toronto, one of those places you guys know.
One of the, you know, one of the music
one
venues.
Of those, I think they only have like two venues there. So
yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
It's kind of a small city.
It is. So tiny, cramped.
Were there any, what were some of the bands that you were able to catch while you were there?
We didn't catch any bands.
What?
We were like, up until, I think, the day we played, we were, like, playing shows.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to concentrate as many shows into the tour as possible, which, in hindsight, we probably could have chilled a little bit more, but it was fun. So, yeah, we were pretty busy playing shows, and we didn't get a chance to check out.
Ah, darn.
Yeah, I know.
Well, when you get selected next year.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at the lineup, because, as I mentioned, there's a few bands that we're friends with that were playing that week, and just looking at the lineup and all the artists that are going, like, oh man, there's so much to see.
Yeah, I know. I definitely kind of wish we got to hang out and leisurely attend shows and not be all over the place, but that was the case. It was very frantic.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto, especially just driving around Toronto, was like the lead up to knowing we would have to do that was so stressful. It's really, like, people complain about Vancouver driving. It's like 10 times worse.
Just, well, 10, at and least 10 times,
times
more people. Yeah. 10 times the size, more people.
Yeah.
It's like, magnify all the problems here.
Truly.
But you will have the opportunity to check out some bands at your next festival appearance.
Mm-hmm.
You've been selected to play the inaugural Skookum Festival in Stanley Park this September. What was your reaction, like, when you found out you'd been selected? And how did you get selected, I guess?
It was through Music BC.
Okay.
Yeah, so I guess they were doing kind of a, trying to find a spotlight on new Vancouver artists that they could showcase there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they selected me and Andrew Phelan?
Phelan, yeah.
Phelan, yeah. Okay, I didn't know if it was Phelan or Phelan.
Phelan, I think.
Phelan, I'm feeling that.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was really cool. I'm really excited for that. I'm excited to see... I think that's one where we can leisurely kind of check it out since I live here. And I can go whenever I want.
Yeah.
And check it out.
I do really appreciate the festival structure where I can, like, pass out in my own bed and shower before
I love
go
that.
Back to
yeah.
the...
Oh. That's going to be great.
Camping's fun, but it can be a bit demanding.
Yeah. truly.
When you're hungover and stinky, it's a bit much.
Not a good combo.
Any bands that you have on your short list for Skookum to check out?
I'm just excited to see the Queen Florence. Florence and the Machine.
She'll
the
be great.
Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Killers will be nostalgic.
Yeah.
And fun. Like, there's some fun headliners there that I'm like, wow, I never thought I'd really actually see you in concert. Like, the 10-year-old in me is screaming.
Yeah, I haven't seen Florence or the Killers either, so this will be a great opportunity.
That'll be really cool.
Yeah, Jane and I are going to be there. We were very happy to see when we downloaded the app and saw the schedule. There's no conflicts with any of the bands that we
want to
see.
Oh, really? I haven't looked yet. I should check that out. That's always the worst when there's a conflict.
Yeah, I think there's only two. Well, okay, there's like four stages, but they stagger it pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have like four bands playing the same slot.
Yeah.
Which is nice and smart.
Yeah, I think they really took their time into scheduling it quite nicely for this inaugural year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully the first of... I hope this one, like, after Squamish and after Pemberton's like, okay, can we do this?
Yeah, like, let's not keep making the same mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, as you mentioned, the fact that it's in the city and people can leave and come back and they don't have to deal with camping and all that.
Yeah.
All that stuff, I think it has a better chance.
Agreed. Oops.
Let's see. And besides Skookum, obviously, what does the rest of 2018 have in store for Haley Blaze?
Well, aside from just focusing this fall and early winter on recording the new album, I think we'll just try and play... Again, it's hard. It's really hard to really commit to a lot of things short notice because my band is in so many other bands as well. So we're doing a few shows. In September, we're doing Skookum Fest. And then we're also doing Riflandia.
Nice.
Which will be fun. I've never attended nor played, so I'm excited for that.
That's another festival that's got a good lineup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm super excited. I'm almost more excited for Riflandia than...
I know Daniel Caesar's playing that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be good.
And Andy Schaff, my
Ooh,
king.
There you
my
go.
Songwriter king.
King Andrew.
King Andrew. And then in October, I think this October show we're doing at the Vogue, we're opening for Peach Pit. I think we're doing... That's our last show, maybe, of the year, unless something else pops up.
That's a pretty good way to
end the year, I think.
Year?
I think I kind of want to end it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely plan on being at that Peach Pit show.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
The hottest band in Western Canada,
dude.
It seems.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to work our magic to see if we can get these guys on our show.
That'd be nice.
That'd
be fun.
Need them.
They're busy boys.
They are, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
We're very happy to see them successful.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I hope they're not too busy to come on our show.
They'll make time.
Yeah.
For save on meats. Just promise them meats.
See if we can get them a discount on a burger or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Kind of on that, are there any local bands or artists that you'd recommend we bring on the show?
Yeah, I'm sure. Have you had Sam Tudor on the show?
No, not yet.
You should get Sam.
Yeah.
He's my fave. Probably my favorite Vancouver artist right now. I'm obsessed with his latest album, Quotidian Dream. I'm sure he'd come on.
Yeah. And I need to listen to that. I listened to a little bit of it, and I really liked it.
But it's beautiful.
I need to download that onto my phone and give it a full uninterrupted listen.
Yeah, definitely Sam from Vancouver. A lot of, if you can try and get Victoria, everyone in Victoria is good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my short list for Victoria is like Peach Pyramid, Bridal Party.
Yeah.
There's a few others. Smash Boom Pow again, because we did a Skype. That was one of our first episodes. We did a Skype interview.
Oh,
with
cool.
them, but it'd be nice to have
Reignite the Flame.
Yeah, Reignite the Flame. Do an interview in person with Ulysses and Zane, because I know they're both Ulysses and Zane both have their own side projects as well, so we could talk about that.
Yeah, Quarterback is fun too. That's the lead singer of Electric Sex Panther. It's his solo project.
Cool.
And he is awesome.
Yeah. Definitely check that out, too. How can people check out your music and keep up to date on all things Haley Blaze?
Simply everywhere. Spotify, you can check, just search my name. It's so hard to, because people will always spell it with an I or Y, but HaleyBlaze. And on YouTube, Instagram, I'm everywhere. You can't hide from me. I'll find you.
Well, thank you, Haley.
Thank you.
This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we're looking forward to seeing you perform in a matter of minutes.
Cool. I'm stoked.
And speaking...
Get all snuggly.
Yeah. Snug in the snug. speaking of which, we do have another snug show to announce. Join the Pacific Sound Radio team at the Persephone Snug Tasting Room for an acoustic performance by Andrew Phelan next Sunday, August 26th. Seating is limited to about 30 people, so be sure to get there early. The show kicks off at 6 p.m. See you there. And Travis, let's close this out. Thanks for listening. We're your hosts, James Olson.
And Travis Noel.
Pacific Sound Radio is produced by Jane Fraze. And Travis, how can people find us, check us out?
Well, you can follow us on Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, as well as our Instagram, at Pacific Sound Radio, Twitter, at Pacific S Radio, YouTube, Pacific Sound Media, as well as our website, PacificSoundRadio.com.
If you know a local band or artist that you think should appear as guests on our show, let us know. Fill out the form on our website or send us an email to TalkPSR@gmail.com. As always, we are live on the air every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. only on Save On Radio. We're going to wrap things up with one more song by Haley Blaze. This is definitely my favorite song off of her latest EP, Let Yourself Go. This is Remove Tag.